title today of this talk is Under the Trees, Late Afternoon. One of my old friends from school, when I was a teenager, this last summer when I was visiting, gave me a very simple video camera. It's not much bigger than a mobile phone. And so Jan has his toys, and this was my toy. And one of the things that it inspired me to do was to ask my family while I had 1 month with them about their own childhoods, but especially their first memory and their some best memories from childhood. And one or two memories that came up for people were about being with people they loved and feeling included, feeling belonging, feeling loved. But it was very interesting that a number of different people mentioned a very similar kind of moment. It was as a child lying under a tree in the late afternoon. And I said, wow, it's interesting that people who didn't hear each other speaking have said something very similar. And my older brother said, yes, the late afternoon, that's always when those moments happen. The sense of just lying on the earth and the light filtering through and being there without any problem, even if we have problems. Where we're not trying to be nobody, but our sense of the personal is not cluttering up the space. There's just light filtering through. We could say that the personal is not ashamed of itself, and therefore there's room for the impersonal. The personal in the care of the impersonal, just lying in the afternoon light. One of the many teachers whom I've never met talks about our capacity as human beings to connect with a kind of magic or living quality in any perception, in anything that we see or hear or taste, etc. There might be certain moments where that connection with the magical or the living quality in things kind of happens by itself under the trees in the late afternoon. But our capacity is to connect with that living quality, even when we don't like what we see or hear, etc. And this is what I call the tree of life. And I would like to talk a little bit about the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, while saying I don't know any of the esoteric readings of that story. It's just my childlike look at the story that some traditions say is how we began. How we began to be human. I've noticed over the days here and in the last years of being privileged to sit with people under trees in the late afternoon, under trees in the middle of the night, under trees in the early morning. And hear about the good and the bad and the ugly and the beautiful. And to meet there. The importance of addressing what happens to us when we are relating to life by relating to our ideas of things. When we are judging, basically. When we feel that we know good and bad. I I guess we've all heard the story. There's the tree of life that has good fruits and it's enough. And there's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that also has fruit. And God says, better not to eat from that tree. And of course we do. Of course we do. How would a human being not eat from both trees? When we live trying to feed ourselves from our knowledge of good and evil, what happens? One friend today was talking about the sense of pressure, of being paralyzed, of feeling powerless, because of the feeling of needing to get it right. And she said, it's not that there's necessarily someone out there judging me, and it also doesn't seem to be me judging me. It just seems to be this sense everywhere of being judged. Sometimes to begin a meditation, to relax towards meditation, as an instruction, I sometimes say, what if we can't get it right? What if meditation is not a thing that we can get right? It can be equally important to feel, what if meditation, which means life, is something that we also can't get wrong? We can't get it right, we can't get it wrong. When we want to be in connection with the living quality of things, the magic of life. We may need to be able to access something other than right and wrong, good and evil. It can help to question our judgments. Is it really true that succeeding is always good for me? For example, is it really unnourishing to suffer? There's a woman who has as much experience as anyone with suffering. And she talks about how we could relieve ourselves from the idea of suffering. She said, the idea of suffering, which is not the reality. For real suffering is always fruitful. Real suffering is always fruitful. It gives us something to eat. Real suffering can turn life into a precious thing. The idea of suffering is what needs to, she says, be destroyed. If we very simply, in simple language, notice how we behave and what happens and whether it works when we're trying to do what we think we should do. A friend of mine who's a nurse talks about when she's working and she feels the pressure of time and should, her work becomes impossible. And when she remembers that she's a human being and she's with human beings, things get done. It's human again. I think we have the idea that being human, we are a danger. Just by being human, we're a danger to this planet. But when we take the pressure off for a moment, we can sometimes feel a living quality coming through. There's another aspect of our experience that is also the knowing of good and evil. So if you've heard the word Vedana, has anyone heard the word Vedana? Yes. Okay. Vedana is in our experience when we very quickly, before we realize it, filter what is positive, negative, and neither. But the word Vedana comes from the same root as the word to know. And so it is our knowing of things as positive, negative, or neither, good or evil. It happens so quickly. We like or we don't like that person or that word. How could we possibly feel through that filter to the living quality of something we don't like? Something that we know from our past experience to be bad. How could we feel the living quality through the filter that says, in our knowing, that is good? Really just to connect without the filter, through the filter, around the filter. How can we do it? I was reading that people who design magic tricks for magicians, people whose work is to design illusions or tricks, look for people, he said, the people that are more easily going to be fooled are the ones who are sure they can't be fooled. And so they look in the audience for the person who looks the most highly cultured, the most experienced, with the most preconceptions. Bring them on the stage, and working with them, it becomes very simple, very easy to bring the whole audience into an experience of illusion, a different kind of magic. So simply, this is just very simply questioning. First, our judgments. And second, this kind of more quick and even visceral, like gut kind of feeling of good, bad, that is part of human experience. In trying to feel with this woman whom I quoted, Etty Hillesum, what she could mean by fruitful suffering. And also questioning, when we think that we know we're right, or even we have a gut feeling that something is good, are we really connecting to the living quality? Or are we relating to the idea? Are we relating to the idea that's fed by our past experience that we're not aware of? We can see that we have different reactions of what is good and what is bad, good and evil, right and wrong. How can we play and be human, playfully, fully human, agreeing to disagree? How can we find a creative response to difference rather than the quick, easy response based on the past of good, bad? Protecting ourselves from the living quality in things by just relating to the ideas and preconceptions. In sustainable design and sustainable agriculture, one of the principles that is most important is to learn how to let difference be a richness. They say that we know things are different because we see, we know things are separate because we see differences, salty, sweet. For example, there's a boundary between the salty and the sweet. And in those boundaries between what seem to be separate because they are different, in those boundaries is the gold, is the nourishment, is where we could find exponentially more, on a very gross level, food for us. On the more subtle boundaries is where we can find the nourishment that we are longing for. The kind of fruit that our beings already know how to digest. So in sustainable design and sustainable agriculture, they talk about the importance of boundaries as a place where there's a potential for rich exchange. And are you okay? And there's a potential stress. So, sitting in a chair, the boundary between me and the chair is potentially helpful, and there's potential danger or stress. So one of the big insights and challenges in sustainable agriculture, in the kind of garden we would like to live in, is to learn how to see the richness and to call upon the richness, seeing the potential stress, not pretending it's not there, but by calling on the richness, the stress either becomes acceptable or no longer manifesting as stress because we are playing with things in the way that is fruitful. So there are so many examples on so many levels. I want to give one small example. We can find a boundary between sleeping and waking. There's a difference in our experience when we're asleep and when we're awake. So this could be called a boundary. And in sleep medicine, the scientists say that there's half an hour upon waking where they say the mind is cold. It hasn't warmed up to speed yet. So this could be a potential problem, potential stress. If I demand from my mind in that first half an hour that it solve math problems, drive a car properly, do surgery, but if I call upon my mind in that half an hour for something else, if I look, what is the richness in that half an hour? If the quick mind is still cold, is there something else? Are there other species living in that boundary? Other kinds of thoughts, other kinds of experiences, other kinds of insights. So we could use that half an hour for something other than sharpness and enrich our lives. So this is gardening, knowing what kind of fruit to pick, when and where. What happens when there is a moment that we're not dominated by judging or relating to things as ideas, relating to our experience as ideas, our perceptions as an idea of a thing? In the story of the Garden of Eden, before entering into the judging, there's nakedness. And this symbol can be really helpful for meditation. If we start to give the personal to that living quality, which is impersonal, which is in everything, which is available in every perception, if we give our experience of our person to the impersonal, instead of trying to work on the personal from within the personal. We may be surprised to find that the personal happily opens and reveals what it thought it had to hide. So when our energy is not getting lost in judging and comparing the whole day and night, there's more energy for clear seeing. And the living quality in what we could say wants to be seen, has been hiding, wants to be seen, can express. And so at first we start to notice, ah, I did not realize that I have a tendency and a pattern to feel hurt or to feel angry or to feel afraid or to feel whatever. I didn't notice that I have a tendency to speak too much or too little, or whatever the tendency might be. Ah. By not trying to work on so much, working hard on, by letting the personal rest under the trees in the late afternoon, we can start to see the patterns that need to be seen. So there's more energy for seeing, and we start to drop into a natural sense of what's helpful and what is no longer needed, what is not needed. We usually don't trust that sense, and we jump back to the judgment. This can't be right. But continuing to see the pattern, sometimes it's as if we're in an egg, and the eggshell is cracking, but the membrane is whole. We're seeing the pattern, but we can't quite get out of it. We still feel so separate within our personality. So sometimes this manifests in a terrible way. There may be a pattern of victimness, an inability to say no. And so today we were speaking about sexuality. And sometimes for some people, just the word sexuality, much less a situation of sexuality, something closes down and can't say no. And so someone else may say, ah, well, she didn't say no. She may see the pattern of victimness and still not be able to get out of it, not able to move. Potential danger in a boundary condition. We keep seeing a pattern, and we somehow means, I'll say what I think it means, we burst through the membrane of the egg. So you know, if you've tried, sometimes the membrane is very strong, trying to crack an egg. Got the shell, there's still a skin in there. And somehow, we manage to burst through. The somehow is when we see through the idea of sexuality, the idea of being overpowered, the idea of victim, the past influence there. And if we can let ourselves continue for this to honestly see, sometimes we don't keep going. We can really come out of the shell, come out of the pattern. And it can start to be fun to play with that eggshell. We enjoy the challenge of what used to entrap us. Have you felt this? Have you seen this? A pattern that used to be your world, that now there's something in you, a living quality in you, that seeks the challenge for fun, to practice the freedom, to feel the freedom, feel the feathers. We no longer even feel exposed there. At first, it can feel very exposed coming out of the pattern, but how will I manage? We can really feel that we might die if we leave the pattern behind. If we leave the fear, we leave the pressure to get it right behind. Can really feel like life or death. And then we're out of the shell, and the living quality is more present. And so we can play with the shell. And then maybe after a while, the shell, we can't even find it anymore. It can be helpful to have that in mind when we're still inside and all gooky. We could wonder about that garden of Eden. If it was necessarily a mistake to eat from both trees. Maybe the mistake was just we didn't just tell God, hey, I ate it. It's part of my experience. Here comes judging, here comes Vedana, here comes filtering. And there's also this living quality. There's also the tree of life. What seems to happen, that I find a strange image, but I'd like to share. Is something kind of by coincidence, by keeping on adding, allowing the nakedness to become transparency. What we used to think of as our problems keep revealing themselves and opening themselves, revealing their richness. And so it's like the story, another very well-known story, of the stone soup supper, but in a weird way. So the story of the stone soup supper is some wanderers, some strangers come to town. Let's say we come out of the hall and there they are. And they're hungry and they don't have any money. And they have a big pot. And they ask, where's some water? And they ask, where are a few stones? And they put the water and the stones in the pot. Make a fire. Start heating the water. And they say, wow, this is a pretty thin soup. And each of us, in the original story, each of us feels, what is it that I have that I don't actually need to save for tomorrow? And slowly we come forward and add to the soup. In my version of the stone soup today, what we could add most fruitfully to the soup is what we're most afraid of in ourselves. What we most think we need to hide. When we can find a way to feel the living quality in the actual experience of what we thought was scary or dangerous in us. So we fear something in us. We hate something in us. We don't like something in us. We think something in us is wrong, or at least not right. And we hide it. That would make a tasty soup. And that, when we feel that nakedness is how we are, and slowly start to feel that it's not so exposed, and if it's exposed, it's exposed to life. So we can untrain ourselves to feel, if I'm exposed, I'm being judged. If I would dare to expose myself, I will be judged, therefore I will not. we can start to feel another way, connecting to the living quality in any experience, and then feeling how that naturally opens itself. You can even feel how it is a kind of generosity to stop hiding what we think is wrong. We can start to feel when the hiding is less strong. How much more energy is available in us, and what kind of quality of energy is more available. So more energy and a different quality. A quality that tends towards more and more refined, clear seeing. More and more offering the living quality in us to life, to the garden, to the soup, as you wish. And if we could let ourselves play in this way, unashamedly, less emphasis on rating ourselves or relating to ourselves or to this or that or the other. Life not so much as relating to, simply living. If we dare to accept that nakedness, we may find that there's nothing to expose. And what is left is a transparency. Where the personal is no problem. Are there any questions or comments? Also welcome. So kind of imagining the worst case scenario, like what could be the worst? If I feel disempowered by the fear of exposure, okay, so what if? All of it. And then what happened? Ashamed. So the loving kindness came by itself, you're saying, or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I reject in the name of everyone.
Yeah. Could you hear okay? in the back. Could you hear him? Yeah? Okay. Thank you, Paul. Anyone else? So let's have silent time together. May we meet life as it is, without preconceptions. May we meet life as it is, even when there are preconceptions. May we be life as it is. Thank you for listening.